today we're going to talk about what we are going to talk about this season on the Kindred Conversation. And this season, we are really focused on the new adages. So let's start with telling everyone a little bit about what the new adages are.
Okay, what are the new adages? An adage is a short saying that transmits knowledge, and some have been around for generations. You might remember a parent or grandparent saying, "A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. A leopard can't change its spots, or better safe than sorry." There are hundreds of these sayings, and they all translate into excellent advice and food for thought. I have come up with dozens of new adages over the years. Some are quotes from famous people, some I heard somewhere and they stuck with me, and others I just made up. We all know how difficult it can be to learn a new behavior. Throughout my practice, I have used the new adages to help my clients. They serve as prompts to actions or self-checking. Many new adages are interconnected, but they are meant to be explored in any order and revisited frequently. I have had clients that I saw 25 years ago tell me that not only do they still use the new adages, but many people in their lives use them as well. It is my sincere hope that these ideas have the same effect in your life.
So tell me, how did the new adages come to be? Like, how did you come to find that adages were a great tool for people?
Well, I didn't realize that they were adages, and I didn't think about that until later. I just started coming up with sayings. And so on my message, when people would call me for appointments, it would say, "Change your thinking, change your life." And people started saying, "I love that. That really made me want to call, and it made me want to make an appointment." I thought, well, that's interesting. And so as we went through and I kept saying different things, or like I said, I'd hear them or I'd read them somewhere, I thought, you know, if you're going to change your thinking, you have to change the way that you talk to yourself. And the adages do that. So that's kind of how they came about.
And I can testify that these are very useful because it's an easy way to recall something. So as you learn what these are, you know, the adages sort of come to mind. And it's kind of just an easy tool for mindfulness, really.
Right.
So let's talk about how to use the new adages, because we talk about mindfulness and it's kind of a kind of big esoteric topic, but these are really, you know, easy tools for mindfulness. So let's talk a little bit about how, you know, each week as we talk through one of these adages, how you could, you know, keep it in mind, use it in your daily life, whatever.
Well, I think it's really important to realize that people have a certain way of looking at things and saying things to themselves, and they're not really aware of it. And so when we repeat these things to ourselves, it becomes our thought pattern. And as I was working with people, I realized that they were saying things they weren't even aware of. So I thought, well, why not put something new in? And we all know that mindfulness is a catchphrase, and there's a lot of different ways of being mindful. But the biggest thing is, it's really hard. And people do not stay with it because it's so difficult. A lot of times it is meditation, which I myself can't do. I'm too hyper and I can't focus that long. Or it's being able to focus on something in the horizon and go with that. And a lot of us can't do that. But if you start to say things differently to yourself, it ends up becoming your thought pattern. You remember in the old books, and maybe you don't, but in the old psychology books back in the 70s and 80s when I was going to school, there were those ropes and they had like dust coming off of them. And they look like ropes. And what happened was they were the neurons that fired into our brain with our thoughts. Well, after mindfulness came about and we got neuroscience, because basically for many, many years, there was no proof that what we did worked. And so after they started doing neuroscience and looking at the brain and actually seeing what happens and what goes on in the brain, taking images and all that, there was finally scientific proof that therapy and mindfulness works. So that kind of gave us some credibility. So as I wrote this book and started with these adages, I thought, you know, okay, we all have automatic thoughts that we repeat to ourselves over and over again. This makes our neurons fire in a certain way. When we change those thoughts from negative to positive, the old neurons die and new ones are created. The new adages can take over old negative thoughts and actions and change the way you think and respond to external events, as well as your own moods and feelings. Mindfulness made easy. And that was the interesting thing, because I always talk about building a bridge, and I inadvertently built a bridge to mindfulness. The best way to use adages is to first come up with the ones that you feel are important to you. And we will go through each one every week. We'll do one or two. I don't know what we're going to do, but we'll figure that out. And then you think, oh, that resonates with me. And as you read the adages and they resonate with you, you pick an adage and you use it. You read it in the morning and at night. Turn it over in your mind. Think of times that would have helped you in the past. Use the adage as an affirmation. Talk about it with friends and colleagues. Watch and be aware. When you are at the crossroads, this adage will actually put you into mindfulness and will alter your old ways of doing things. We don't need to reinvent the wheel again, but we can find new and different ways to use it.
And the book that Karen is referring to is called The New Adages, which is a companion to the podcast. So if you're interested in having something tangible to go back and read, you can learn more about it at thekindredconversation.com. You can read all of the new adages online, or we also have them in a book or as in a card format if you want something that's sort of more mobile to keep with you as a reminder.
Yeah, affirmation cards kind of.
Yeah. So let's give an example of a new adage.
Which one should we start with? What do you think is most important?
I would say, well, something I think it's actually in an old saying from Mark Twain, it's easier to stay out than get out, which is an adage that comes to mind for me all the time. And, you know, it's pretty straightforward, but when you think about it applied in, you know, how you interact with other people or how you interact in your relationships, it kind of takes on a new meaning.
Well, the thing about these adages is they're so short, and so you just come up with a thought process about them. So it's easier to stay out than get out. Again, this is Mark Twain. This is one of my most favorite quotes and should be a filter for almost all of the decisions you make in life. It simply means to think before you speak or act. Consider the ramifications and then proceed with caution. It is so much harder to talk your way out of something or get out of something that you committed to than it is just to stay out at the very beginning. How many times have you, I know I myself, have said things in conversations, I've been out with friends, and I've said something, and I went to bed at night and thought, oh my gosh, you know, wonder how they took that. I wonder what they meant, you know, if they were thinking I was being rude or whatever. And I was up all night worrying about it, thinking, well, what am I going to say to him? How can I get out of this?
Yep.
And it's like, now I can just say to myself, before I say anything, you know, Karen, it's easier to stay out than get out. Just be quiet.
Oh, yeah. And I think about this before I enter into something that I know, I think I used to be really passive and would try and do things to be nice. So whether that was, you know, agreeing with someone or, I don't know, doing business with them somehow, buying something from them, getting engaged in some kind of activity that I know full well I don't want to do. Now I just feel like, oh, okay, well, it's just easier to stay out than get out. So, you know, if you're thinking like, ooh, I don't want to, you know, buy this thing or join this club or go to this event, like, it's going to be much easier just to say no in the first place than it is to actually get into it and figure out a way to extract yourself. And this could be huge things. Like, if I was honest with myself, I probably shouldn't have gotten married, but you know, you're just kind of rolling with it. So it would have been much easier to just stay out than get out in that circumstance.
And that's a really big one.
That's a huge one.
And that's your first marriage.
Yeah.
We need to clarify that. It's the second marriage is awesome. But I feel too that, you know, basically what this is setting boundaries. Mm-hmm. And everything just kind of flows. And so when you think to yourself, it's easier to stay out than get out, you've set a boundary. I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to set an expectation. I'm not going to get into this. And then I don't have to stay up all night worrying about what the heck I said to somebody that they may or may not have taken.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you think, okay, when I get up in the morning, I'm going to call them. And then you think, okay, I'm going to do that because everything in the middle of the night is so much worse, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get up in the morning and you think, okay, they probably didn't even know. They probably didn't take it that way. And the worst thing you can do is call them up and try to explain something because they probably didn't even take it that way.
Yeah.
So a lot of it's in your own mind.
Yeah.
So it's basically so you don't screw with your own mind.
Oh, interesting. I've actually never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
I thought it was more about taking an action, like don't get yourself involved in something.
And that is certainly one way, you know, yeah, I don't want to buy that or I don't want to do that or whatever. But no,
yeah.
To me, it's more I don't want to regret something that I may have said and I didn't mean it the way that they may have taken it. But then you Monday morning quarterback yourself and you're like, oh, my gosh, what if they thought this or what if they thought that? And you have no idea what they thought because another adage is nothing's about you, which we'll get into as we go along. But it's like, no, you make it worse when you get up in the morning and decide, okay, I'm going to call. And I'm going to say, you know, I said that last night, and I didn't mean this. I hope you're okay with that. And they're like, oh, my gosh. They probably didn't even remember what you said.
And now you've dug yourself back in.
And now you have to go back there. So it's just like, let it go. But the adage, it's easier to stay out than get out, to me means just keep your mouth.
Yeah.
Don't say anything that you're going to have to be up all night worrying about.
Interesting, because to me it means if you're someone who's passive, you don't like confrontation, you don't like being assertive, you don't like saying no, it's like this powerful way to think about, I don't want to get myself embroiled in something that I know is going to make me miserable. I already know before I get into it that I'm not going to want to be there, but I don't know how to say no. Mm. Just to be like, okay, the pain of saying no now is less than the pain of extracting myself later. So it's much more of like an action or decision type thing.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, see, and it's powerful.
Well, I think people, you know, get to a place where they feel like they have to overcome some objection or they have to figure it out or fix it. And that's what kind of what you're saying is, okay, I don't want to overcommit.
Yeah.
Or I don't really want to do this. And you don't really want to say to someone, you know, that's not interesting to me, or I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
It's easier just to, you know, stay out.
Yeah.
And not make a statement at all.
Yeah.
So that's interesting to look at our two perceptions.
Yeah.
Of it, because I look at it more as, why have I said these things?
Yeah.
And that I may have offended someone, and I may have to be up all night worrying about how I'm going to get the heck out of it. And you're looking at it like more, I don't want to commit to this.
Yeah.
And what do you think that says about like your life?
I never say anything terrible.
No, but I mean, like I mean, you're always, you know, you're going to be on a board, or you're going to do this with your marketing, or you're going to do that, and you're going to be on this committee and all that. Well, I don't have that in my life.
Yeah.
My life's about talking and about, you know, things that are interactive with people, not so much committing to something.
Yeah.
And so I can be somewhat of a loose cannon.
Yeah.
And so this has really helped me to just realize, you know what, Karen, it's not worth it. Don't be up all night.
Yeah.
Sleep is way more important.
Well, and I love thinking about it this way, actually, because I do that all the time. I'm like a, you know, loud mouth kind of spastic person. And so all the time I'll get in the car on the way home from work and think, man, did I say anything stupid today? Or, you know, did I talk too much? Did I, like, you know, Monday morning quarterback? I do that all the time. So I think that's a good way to think about it.
Yeah. And I think both ways are. And any good salesperson knows the technique. Years ago, when you used to get phone calls, you know, and they were salespeople would call you on your landline, which a lot of you probably don't remember this, but it would be like at dinner time, and they would call at the most inopportune time, and then they would say, you know, hey, you want to buy this and this and this, which is kind of what you're talking about. And you're like, oh, yeah, just to get them off the phone.
Yeah.
Whereas a really good salesperson who's trained well needs to be able to say, which is part of a conversational thing and a dialogue thing that we'll talk about later, they need to be able to say, hey, is this a good time?
Yeah.
And then you're able to say, no, it's not. And then you get out of it.
Yeah.
But if they don't say that, you end up getting stuck in it. And then you're trying to back out. And then all of a sudden they send you the form and they keep calling you.
Yeah.
To buy it. And you said you would and all that. So
yeah.
It's kind of that old school thing.
So
in your mind.
I love it. Another way to look at that tool, which I use all the time.
All right.
Okay.
So
there you go. That's an adage.
Okay.
Okay, so the second thing we're going to talk about in each of our podcasts are our peak moments, which is a concept that I love that I've started to try and infuse with my kids mm-hmm. so that they learn how to pause and look back at their day and see what makes them happy. And well, we can talk about that in another episode, kind of what I'm doing with the kids. But this has been a great tool in my life. So let's talk about peak moments and how they came to be.
All right, well, sometimes our expectations of happiness are all messed up. We seem to expect happiness to be an extreme high. Intense excitement is what Asian philosophers call the near enemy of true joy. It is something that looks like a genuine thing, but it really is its evil twin. What we expect happiness to feel like, the best part of a thrill ride or a huge jackpot win in Las Vegas or an incredibly romantic night, we are missing the point of true happiness. Not to say that these aren't great experiences. This is where peak moments come to play. We need to be constantly aware of how we are feeling in the peaceful moments of pure contentment. Peak moments come in many shapes and sizes and can be some of the quietest times in our lives. Finishing a great book, watching a movie that we totally connect to, sitting with a loved one and feeling understood, watching a sunset. Peak moments come to us all the time if we know what they are and pay attention to our lives as we live them. Peak moments are as unique as the individual experiencing them. They are full of peace and connection. The connection can be spiritual, it can be nature, it can be with another person, it can be with anything that feels right to you in that moment. Since my daughters were little, I spoke to them of peak moments. When I was experiencing a peak moment, I shared it with them. They often call or text me when they have experienced a peak moment, and I can vicariously live it as well. Please, pay attention to your life. Look for these peak moments. They are everywhere.
So have you had any peak moments lately that stick out in your mind?
Well, I have some weird ones. You know, my husband and I were just in Vegas last week, and I like to play blackjack, and he doesn't really like to play. And so we kind of had an argument about that, and he just said, just go and play, and I'll just do something else. And then I found a table that was $10 table. So I just texted him and said, hey, $10 table, and he just came right over. And we figured out that, you know, if I just buy the chips for him, and they're only chips, not money, and we sat by each other, we had a great table going on there. There were six people there, a great dealer, and we had the best time. We both won money, not a lot of money. We just played for fun. But the interaction at the table, to have my husband next to me playing the game and enjoying it,
yep,
and being a part of it rather than me just doing it on my own, it was just like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. We had a reservation at a really great restaurant, and we were having so much fun, and I said, it's okay if we miss our reservation. We'll sit at the bar there or something. You know, let's don't worry about it because we're having so much fun.
Yeah.
So that was a peak moment that I had recently.
Awesome.
They're not always about nature.
Yeah. Sometimes they're about a hot table in Vegas and a $10 table, which is
very
a rare
unusual
thing.
Especially at a nice hotel.
Yeah. I don't know, like I've had lots of, you know, we've been trying to talk to our kids more about kind of noticing the good things so that like when something doesn't go their way, they don't melt down and have it destroy their day. I would say 4th of July peak moment, and this is really where the whole peak moments thing started with the kids. My brother-in-law's mom lives on the Salt Lake Country Club here, and they put on a fireworks show, and you can walk right out of his mom's backyard and you lay down on the green and the fireworks, you know, you can smell the, you know, firework powder, whatever it's called, shrapnels landing on you. And it's like a tradition now, you know, at least he's been every year of his life. So 44 years he's been doing this. And this year they had a computer malfunction. And so the fireworks were like an hour late and the kids were melting down. You know, it's late at night. And we had to tell the kids that the fireworks, like they weren't happening because of a computer. So then there was this explanation of like, why do you need a computer to light off fireworks? And so we...
Which I don't really understand why you need a computer to light fireworks.
There were many tears shed as we like walked off the green, like, well, we're just not going to have fireworks. But we had such a great day. Let's think about all the good things. And as we were loading up the car, the fireworks started going off. And by then, most people had left. So I grabbed the kids and we ran back out.
And these are little kids.
Yeah, these are tiny kids. My kids are 5 and 2.5.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is it. And we ran out and there was no one there. And it was like we had a private fireworks show for 20 people. And it was one of those things where it was, you know, we were probably up too late and had a long day and we were all going to pay for it later. And 4th of July was on a Wednesday, which just made it so weird anyway. But, you know, I think watching everything through your kids' eyes, you know, creates a lot of peak moments in your life. But that was really fun. It was like a private fireworks show for us because we kind of stuck around for an hour waiting for these computers. It was, we were rewarded for it.
No, and I think that that's really a good point to look at it and say, you know, not even just living it through your kids, but just being there yourself.
Yeah.
And just being next to your kids.
Yeah.
And enjoying it as much as they were.
Yeah.
Maybe more because you understood more the sacrifice and what had happened and how lucky you were.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a matter of being, oh my gosh, I'm so lucky
yeah.
that this happened. And look, the kids aren't aware there's only 20 people in the whole golf course.
Yeah.
But you are.
Yeah.
So that's just like a special thing where you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I stuck around.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And the kids are almost secondary.
Yeah.
To that peak moment.
Yeah, that's true. There were lots of things. It was
very
layered.
It was great and they loved
yeah.
it. But for you, I feel like it was probably like, wow, this is like unbelievable.
Yeah.
And good on me that I didn't run off and worry about getting out the parking lot.
Right.
Before it got too
crowded. Worry about getting the kids to bed. Because at
yeah.
that point, like that ship has sailed. It's
yeah.
late. Let's like see what happens. So.
And if they fall asleep in their ornery, so what?
Yeah.
Because
exactly.
I'm going to enjoy it either way.
Yeah. And hopefully I won't ever forget that because I don't think it'll happen again where it was just like
no.
this, you know,
and you
spectacular
won't forget it, and you'll
thing.
Always be able to talk about it.
Yeah.
And,
it'll be the year that the computer melted down.
And we stayed.
Yeah.
And 700 people left.
Yeah.
But you'll have that feeling and it will bring it back. That's
yeah.
the peak moment too, when you bring it back by just thinking about it.
Yeah.
I remember there was an ad campaign years and years ago, probably 30 years ago, and my husband and I were on Antelope Island, and it said, come up with a scene for It Whispers. And it was for some sort of drink or something. I don't really remember what it was. And we're there looking out at this sunset on Antelope Island, and just looking at, like, this does whisper. This would be the perfect thing for this ad. We should send this in.
Yeah.
But back then, nobody had phones with cameras. And
yeah.
I was like, okay. But I still remember that. And I'll bet that was 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So, and I can still feel that when I think about it.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's, we had a happiness expert come in and speak at a team meeting. And he was talking about how vacations provide you with the most happiness. Like there's an arc of it where you have something planned and leading up to it, you're looking forward
to
it.
The anticipation.
Yeah, the anticipation of it. And then once the, you know, they're actually going on vacation can sometimes be kind of stressful. But then afterwards, remembering the vacation and remembering these feelings provides you with happiness for as long as you can remember the trip.
That's right.
Yeah. And you can kind of recall like, oh yeah, this reminds me of, you know, sitting at that cafe in the middle of Rome and having a glass of Prosecco at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and, you know.
And then whenever you have a glass of that, you can think of that.
Yeah. I don't think you can have a bad moment in Italy, but.
Yeah. Well, it depends. But yeah, you remember the good ones.
Yeah. So the last thing we're going to talk about each week, and I guess maybe I shouldn't make it that concrete because who knows what we're going to come up with, but.
And we only have a certain amount of time. We don't want to bore everybody.
That's true.
We want to keep your attention.
Yeah.
It's about 22 minutes.
We're going to have to look at the analytics to figure out what that ideal drop-off window is. But we definitely want to share things we've read or seen or.
A podcast.
Podcasts we've listened to. That we feel like kind of align with our mission and values and are entertaining and kind of make us think more deeply. So we'll be highlighting those every week because sharing is caring. So anything present for you on that front?
Well, you know, I try and be really careful of what I listen to, you know, because you never know what you're going to get. So you try and get positive and I listen to Esther Perel, which is she is a really wonderful couples counselor, and I would highly recommend. It's called stop it for a minute. It's called Where Do We Begin? And it's actual therapy sessions. So for me, it's like a best man's holiday. But to hear how incredible she is at getting to the point of what is going on with couples, whether it's an affair or whatever it is they're feeling. And she's interesting, she's funny, and it's like eavesdropping into a therapy session, which everybody would love to do. And especially if you haven't been in therapy.
Her book, Mating in Captivity, is also really good, too. We read that in our book club last year. And
she has a new book called The State of Affairs.
Oh, to read
so,
that one.
Yeah, she's interesting.
I've started reading. So I was having a conversation with my sister-in-law. And we were laughing because she reads books over and over again, and I rarely do.
Oh, my gosh, I can't do that.
Yeah. I listen to music over and over again. Like, that's kind of my comfort thing. Like, I'll go back and a piece of music can take me back to a point in my life. So she was like, oh, that's a book for me. Like, if I need to, you know,
but
I want
to
go.
That's different to listen to a 3-minute song.
I know. She's like, she's a speed reader.
Book.
So maybe that's why she can do this. But I'm reading a book right now that I've actually read like 2 or 3 times. And I think it's one of the only books in my life I've read over and over. And it's called Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott. And when I was in my 20s, I really wanted to be a writer. I still want to be a writer. And so I picked up this book as it's, you know, it's a book about writing and life and, you know, how to be a writer. But it's actually more about life than it is about books. And I've found as I've tried to kind of center myself around goals or whatever that I keep coming back to this book. So I started it again, and the premise of the name of the book is that her brother had a project that he had to complete where he was classifying birds, like hundreds of birds, and he'd left it until the last minute to do. And her dad just said to him, well, you got to just take it bird by bird, you know, one bird at a time. And there's a lot of stuff. It's really interesting now, like having written this new adages book and, learned more about this and really bringing this into my life. A lot of the concepts in this book really align. Like she talks about just starting, about like she calls it a shitty first draft. Like you have to have a first draft of something and just get it down on paper. Just, you know, get it out there into the world. And there's a new adage, the best place to start is to start and just getting started. Anyway, so I'm about midway through the book again, but it's one
How
that I've come back to.
You?
I think this is my 4th time reading it since I was maybe 25. Wow. But
how long is it?
I don't know, a couple hundred pages. I'm listening to it this time, which kind of feels like cheating, but... You know, I got to multitask now. I have little kids. I got to fold laundry and
well, that's when
you know,
Starbucks
feed my brain.
In.
Yeah.